everybody, and welcome back to From Complex to Queens, Amazing Avenue's Minor League Podcast. I am Steve Seipa, and I'm joined this week by Lucas Vlahos, Ken Levin, and Thomas Henderson. So, how is everyone doing this week?
Okay. I'm doing well. How are you?
Good. We will start out with some promote extend trade. And on today's date in 1888, so we're going a while back here, a gentleman by the name of George Edward Guard, who was a good friend of Thomas Edison, he recorded a Handel libretto on one of Edison's phonograph cylinders, and basically he made the earliest known complete recording of a musical composition. So basically he recorded the world's first album.
So his mixtape was so fire.
Yo, I'm sure.
I mean, literally the hottest mixtape at the time.
Handel is, you know, what a guy he was.
Dropping those, sick beats.
Those librettos, man.
I have no idea what I'm talking about.
But in honor of that, we're going to keep it simple. We're just going to promote, extend, or trade albums in our lives. So promote would be the ones that were as good as we thought they'd be, extend are ones that were better than we thought they'd be, and trade are obviously ones that did not live up to expectations. So who would like to go first? Lucas, I know since you are you know all about Handel sick beats.
Yep.
You're probably the most knowledgeable here.
See, the funny thing is, like, I used to be, when I was younger, I was like a competition violinist, and now I've grown up to the point where, like, I don't really care about music. So this is not easy for me to do. That said, I do have three here. So the one I'm extending is Yo-Yo Ma plays Ennio Morricone. So Ennio Morricone is a very famous movie score composer. So like Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, Gabriel's Oboe, those sorts of songs. Yeah. And then The Ecstasy of Gold is the one song from Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. So then Yo-Yo Ma did an album playing all those songs, and it's just fucking awesome. Like, I could listen to it on a loop for days. So that's what I'm extending. I'm going to promote Quadrophenia by The Who, because I've always loved that album, but it, like, basically hits expectations because it's The Who, and, like, they're great. And the one I'm going to trade is The Division Bell by Pink Floyd. So it's one of their later albums once Roger Waters, who was their lead guitarist and really the, I would say the heart and soul of the band, but, other people might disagree with that, had left the band due to creative differences. And then they made one album that was okay. And then The Division Bell came out and it's just kind of bad, depressingly bad.
That's the worst.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a giant Pink Floyd fan. I will listen to Wish You Were Here, both the album and the song, on a loop till the end of time. Dark Side of the Moon is great, obviously. Wall is good, but even Animals is another great album. But Division Bell is just no bueno, no bueno.
All right, who would like to go next?
I could go.
All right.
I would say the album that reached my expectations was the new Run the Jewels album. They're like a political hip hop group that their new album came out this year. Two of my albums that I'm picking came out this year, and one came out in 1997.
So unlike literally all the albums I said, great.
And they're one of my favorite rap groups, and this has probably so far been my favorite album of the year. They just hit the nail on the head with every song. The production was out of this world. Politically, like, very poignant for what we're talking about today, as a political rap group would be. The album that I'm going that was better than my expectations was Hayley Williams' solo album. She's the lead singer of Paramore, and she made a solo album, which is kind of like a pop album. And I was a little worried about it, because whenever an artist from a band you like makes a solo album, it's always a little bit of a risk. But it was really good, and I really liked it. And the last album, the one that was disappointing, was 1997 Judas Priest's album, Jugulator. And this is the reason, because Rob Halford left the band, and it was from a string of them in the 80s being like a premier metal band, and this album is terrible. And it's just like in 1990 they made Painkiller and it was really good, and it's like maybe they could still be relevant with all how music is kind of, the genre's kind of leaving them behind because they were kind of like one of the early bands in it, and then as it evolved they kind of stayed to what they were. And then Painkiller really did actually kind of put them, made you think that they could take that next step, and then it took them 7 years to make the next album, and it was bad, and it had a new singer. And it was just one of those things where it's like, well, maybe that was just like a last hurrah instead of it being like a, oh, maybe they could actually get with the times, that how times are changing around them. So yeah, those are my three albums.
Old Man Yells at Cloud.
Literally.
Basically Chinese Democracy before there was Chinese Democracy.
Yeah, it's very similar to something like that, where... Oh god, that album's so bad.
Is Chinese Democracy a band or an album?
It's
what is that?
It's a Guns N' Roses album.
Okay, thank you.
I mean, you can make the argument about any Guns N' Roses album, not Appetite for Destruction, to be on the disappointing one. But Chinese Democracy is just, like, laughably bad.
Much like The Real Thing. Too real?
Well, good thing that we have no listeners in
no,
China.
No, all the bots are going to downvote us on iTunes now. Xi Jinping's, Winnie the Pooh's going to turn his army of bots on us.
Whoops.
Well, at least we make powerful enemies when we make enemies. We have enemies in the upper echelon of the Chinese establishment, and we have enemies in the upper echelon of the Toronto Blue Jays.
Oh, Lord.
All right. Ken, would you like to go next?
Yeah. So for the album that I had high expectations and they met them, I'm going to go with Hamilton, the musical soundtrack. Could not have been more excited for it, and it was everything I wanted. Probably a little more, but, you know, arguably a perfect piece of music. So for the one that was better than I expected is an album called A More Perfect Union. Oh, wait, no, I'm definitely getting that wrong. The Monitor by Titus Andronicus.
Oh, yes.
It's like a... how to explain it? It's like a concept album that compares the Civil War to like a bad breakup, and it's just like this weird Civil War punk rock album.
Yeah, it's real good though.
Like, it's really good. It's like it's a production.
Also, New Jersey Legends, by the way.
Yes,
I mean
Sons of the Garden State.
Slavery would be a good reason to break up with someone.
Had a whole war over it, so yes.
Yeah. And then the one that didn't live up to expectations was, I really liked Kid Cudi in college, and he followed up Man on the Moon Part 1 with just an album that I was completely disappointed by. I think it was Man on the Moon Part 2, The Legend of Mr. Rager, or something like that.
Yeah, I think that's the subtitle. I can't remember.
Total bummer. Yeah, I should have looked that up, but yeah.
I mean, it's so bad you don't remember it. It's like the most damning comment.
Yep. Yeah. My promote, the album I was as good as I thought it would be, is Tool's Fear Inoculum. Tool's my favorite band, and they haven't had a CD since, like, the early to mid 2000s. So for like 15 years, there were rumors that there was going to be a new album and nothing ever happened. And their lead singer is kind of like eccentric and has a pretty good side business. So there was a legit possibility that they might never actually come out with another album, but they did. And it came out in August. And a lot of times when, you know, you build up expectations that just can't possibly be met, but that CD did. It was like six songs, and you know, that's the only bad thing I think about it, was that it was kind of short, but other than that it was like every single song like hit,
and especially on a wait like that, because I know that took forever.
Mm-hmm. My extend, the album that was better than I thought it would be, was Eminem's Music to Be Murdered By. It was a kind of surprise album that he just put out in January, and it was surprisingly good. Eminem since 2000, he's kind of been like hit and miss. He's had like two good CDs and three bad ones or whatever. But this one was like, wow, he's like still good. The main song on it was like, I think honestly the best song that he's ever done. Even better than like Stan.
Really?
Yeah, it's Darkness, it's called. It's like just, it's a very mature content. But like the way that he writes everything, all the lines are like double entendres. So everything he's saying makes sense, and you think that you know what he's talking about. You know, like he's getting ready for a concert and everything, and then at the end, the tone completely changes, and the song just like shifts directions completely, and then all of a sudden, all those lines have like separate meanings completely, and you're like, wow. Holy shit, I did not see that one coming. So, it's a good song. And then, the one that I would trade, I completely forgot about Guns N' Roses, Chinese Democracy.
Oh, God.
I probably would have picked that one. But
with good reason, you forgot.
Yeah, yeah. But now, don't judge me here, but the album that I'm going to trade is Lady Gaga.
Which
Born
one?
Born This Way.
Okay.
My girlfriend and her sister at the time, they were like really big Lady Gaga fans. And that's when she kind of like really blew up big, like 2008, 2009. So like I heard a lot of Lady Gaga at that period of my life. And
you just
know,
heard it too much. Yeah.
Yeah. And you just, you know how it is. You hear things that other people are doing and then either intentionally, unintentionally, it's like, oh, okay, I guess I like Lady Gaga now. So I guess I'm man enough to admit that, I guess.
Oh yeah, I mean it's totally fine. Like,
was this still during her like I'm gonna dress absolutely insane period?
Yes, that was like during her meat dress phase, and then Born.
I forgot about the meat dress.
And then Born This Way was like her I'm Madonna phase, and
yeah, that's
like
fair.
That's a good that comp. CD. Like her first CD had like five or six like legit radio hits, and then her second one had like one or two good songs, so it was kind of like weak as a CD by itself, and then combined with the fact that like, you know, you're not Madonna, it's kind of you know, kind of a disappointment there. So that is my trade.
And I'm just glad all of you had more music knowledge than me.
No, you have some classical music knowledge.
Oh yeah,
I don't.
It's all emptied my brain. It's all gone at this point.
I have roughly 0% classic music knowledge.
All I know about classical music is that the good, the bad, and the ugly song. I already forgot what it's called.
Ecstasy of Gold.
Ecstasy of Gold. Right. That is the inspiration for Hangman Adam Page's song. So.
Is it really?
Yes.
I didn't know. I never put two and two together there.
I mean, Ennio Morricone is a baller. I'll send you guys the link to the album on YouTube. It's pretty great.
All right, so let's update our teams in Taiwan, Korea, and Japan now. And the Unit Lions went 2-2 for the week, and that brings them to 21-28, which is good for third place right now. The hitter of the week is Anko Lin. This is the second time that he's been hitter of the week, and he went 12-21, 3 doubles, 4 homers, 14 RBIs, a walk, and 8 strikeouts. So between the 4 homers that he hit this week and the 4 homers that he hit last week, he catapulted himself into second in the league in home runs. And between him and his teammate Chi Chie Su, that is basically 1-2 in the CPBL in terms of home runs, so. They are certainly hitting.
We love hitting dingers, don't we, folks? Yeah.
And the pitcher of the week is Logan Darnell. That's the first time that he's been. Darnell was originally drafted by the Minnesota Twins in 2010, and he was never a top prospect, but he just kind of worked his way up their system and eventually got a cup of coffee in 2014. He didn't exactly impress, and he was sent back down. And the 24 innings that he pitched are still the only MLB innings that he has on his resume. He's played with the Rays and the Nationals in their minor league systems. He's played for the Somerset Patriots in the Indies. He's played in Dominican Republic, in Mexico, Venezuela, and now he's in Taiwan. And he's allowed 29 earned runs in 32 innings so far this season, so he hasn't been good. And it remains to be seen how long he's going to stick in Taiwan. since we're getting to the point in the season now where teams are releasing foreigners because they sign half-season contracts, which is good and bad, I guess, for both parties. And of note, regarding half-season contracts, Ryan Fairbend, who was basically the best pitcher on the Lions, he was released from his contract because the two parties were unable to come to terms with a second-half contract. So that sucks.
It's an interesting mechanic.
Yeah. It's very soccer-like.
Yeah. The NBA has the whole two-week contract.
The 10 days and stuff.
It's interesting in that, like, you know, it definitely is tough to acclimate yourself to a whole different,
yeah.
I mean, not just a whole different league, but a whole different culture. So I could see it being kind of a safety net for both the player and the team. But when we have a situation like this where the guy is, you know, good in producing and just the team doesn't want to pay him as a result. So, you know, it sucks.
I wonder, like, where he ends up next, because he was legitimately good in that league.
Yeah,
so.
I mean, it's good timing for him, because baseball season is, like, coming back to life here. So maybe he finds his way onto a
team in the States.
Taxi squad somewhere. Yeah, here.
Future Met Ryan Fairbend.
I'd be down with that.
I mean, it's a very Metsian solution to bullpen issues. Rather than actually fixing it.
Throw the knuckleballer in there.
Yep.
His last two appearances were out of the bullpen, so he is a proven reliever now.
Future Mets closer, knuckleballer Ryan Fairbend. That's exactly what you want.
Has there been a knuckleball closer?
I would assume no, just because, or a guy that only throws knuckleballs. I would assume no, because that's just like asking for bad things to happen. But
Phil Niekro has big eye closed for a season energy. Let me see though. Oh, I was spelling his name wrong. Okay. I'm good.
N-I-E-K-R-O?
Yeah, I was doing N-E-I, and I was like, why isn't it coming up?
Oh, well, okay. That's.
Yeah,
I before E, except in like 30 other situations where that's not the case.
He came out of the bullpen in like 150 games in his career. I don't see saves, though. Let me see. He had 29 saves. So, like, kinda. Like, his career high was 9, so it was more like. He would just be a guy who came out sometimes to be a closer, but yeah.
His rubber arm, you just use him when no one else can go, maybe?
Yeah, probably. It was probably like, oh, it's the 14th inning and you started 2 days ago. But you're fine now.
All right,
I guess you don't want a knuckleballer coming. Hey, the 8th inning guy loaded the bases with one out. Let's bring the knuckleballer in. No risk there.
Yeah, exactly.
Not the best move. The LG Twins in South Korea now. They started out pretty strong, but their season as a Mets analog team has, you know, they've stuck to the script and their season has spiraled out of control.
Good.
They went 1-5 last week, and Their one win came on Saturday, and it snapped a 7-game losing streak. So,
ah, yes.
Very messed.
I've seen this movie before.
Because there was a lot of losses, that means that the team was not performing particularly good, and therefore our players of the week were, you know, eh. So the hitter of the week is Kwon-Woo Jung, who went 8-for-14 with a walk, 2 strikeouts, and a hit by pitch. So, you know, solid numbers in a vacuum, but he's basically just kind of a table setter guy. And, you know, that's a pretty light hitter of the week line for, you know, as compared to weeks past.
Yeah.
Eric Campbell hitter of the week vibe.
Yeah.
Which we've definitely had with the Mets a couple times.
Hit a bunch of singles. Good job. You're the best hitter on the team this week.
Look, I definitely have old texts to a friend that were like, should Eric Campbell be playing more? Possibly.
And the answer, the scary thing is that the answer to that question plenty of times was, yeah, probably, because on this roster, yeah.
I was like, maybe he should be getting more starts than he is right now. He hits the ball hard, Lucas. What can I say?
Directly into the ground.
Worms hate him. You'll learn one. We learned this one trick to make all the worms hate you.
Jiang was drafted by the SK Wyverns in 2015, and his rookie year wasn't that great, but once he finally got his legs under him, he turned into one of the better leadoff hitters in the league. He regularly hit over 300 and stole, you know, for a stretch there, at least 20 bases for a good 4 or 5 year period. So, solid player. He signed with the Hanwha Eagles as a free agent in 2014. He was around 30 by this point, so he started slowing down with the stolen bases, but he kept hitting around 300, and he did add a little more power to his game. So he signed with the Twins this year, and hopefully he keeps that trend up. And overall, he's kind of a, you know, like I was saying, it's kind of a boring-ish kind of guy for Hit of the Week, but I did find that he uses the Phantom of the Opera soundtrack for his walk-up music, so that's a bold choice.
Yeah, I'm sold.
And the pitcher of the week, for the second time now, is Chan Hyung Jung, and he threw a complete game shutout against the Wyverns. He allowed 3 hits, so he walked 2 and struck out 6. So we need more performances like that.
Yep.
Very, also very Metsian in that, like, decent pitching, zero offense. Summertime Mets. Oh yeah.
Catch the fever.
Well, no,
you can't say that.
That's true. That's true. Actually, never mind. I take that back.
Your best not to catch the fever, folks. Wear your mask. Stay inside.
Please social distance. Do not listen to my dumb joke. I beg of you, don't catch the fever.
Finally, the Yakult Swallows. They went 3-3 this week and are 4-4 in the year. Hitter of the week for the second week in a row now is Tetsuo Yamada, aka Japanese Mike Trout. He went 6-for-24 with 2 homers, 6 RBI, a walk, 8 strikeouts, and a stolen base. So he's up to 4 homers and 2 stolen bases in 8 games so far. So he is, you know, looks like he's on his way to another 30-30 season if he keeps it up.
Love it.
And pitcher of the week is Hiroshi Takanashi, and he pitched 7 scoreless innings. He gave up 3 hits, he walked 2, and he struck out 5. Takanashi, he was drafted by the Nippon Ham Fighters in the 2013 draft. He was their 4th round pick, and he spent a couple of years in the minors before he was brought up in 2015, and he won the Pacific League Rookie of the Year award. He had a 2.38 ERA in 109 innings as a starter and a reliever, but he was never really able to regain those heights. You know, periodically he pitched all right. But basically, he was just kind of shuttling up and down from the minors to the majors. And in December 2018, he was traded to the Swallows. And his season last year was more or less the same. He spent some time in the minor league system and time on the major league roster. Stuff is about average. So unless he magically develops more velocity or he perfects one of his off-speed pitches with the Swallows coaching staff, probably going to be more the same for him in the future. His fastball hovers around 90, tops at around 92, 93. And then he complements it with a 12-6 curve, a forkball, and a slider. So maybe the change of scenery will help him. You know, this is his first year. He's only been on the team for a year now. So maybe he'll get settled and become good like he was in his rookie year this season. That would be nice.
They would need it.
Yeah, pitching is...
the pitching is the problem.
There's only so much Gabriel Ynoa can do. Yeah. All right, so the Mets. We'll get to the Mets now, finally, 20 minutes into our Mets podcast. But they finally signed Pete Carl Armstrong a couple of days ago. They signed him for slot value, which was basically $3.4 million. And they already signed Isaiah Green for $850,000, which was $79,800 under slot.
I'm a little surprised he got under slot.
I expected him to be an overslot guy. Honestly.
Me too.
Agreed. They signed Anthony Walters for $20,000, which is basically $630,000 under slot. They signed Matthew Dyer for $350,000, which is about $140,000 under slot. And they signed Eric Ors for $20,000, which was basically $340,000 on the slot. So everything combined, that means that they have about $1 million to go over slot for JT Ginn. And the slot value for him is $1.4 million. So that means the Mets can go to about 2.5 without any problems, without having to even reach into the little 5% extra that they're allowed. According to reports from 2018, he turned down the Dodgers when they offered him 2.4. So he, assuming that the Mets offer him, you know, the 2.5 that they can go to, he's basically back to where he was when he was drafted out of high school. And with everything going on, I would assume that he takes the money that the Mets offer and sign with them because, you know.
I mean, dude's got Tommy John. Minor leagues are in a state of flux. I cannot imagine he turns. I mean, you would need, like, balls of steel to turn that down.
Yeah, for sure.
He bet on himself the first time, rejecting L.A., and things kind of worked out, even though he did get hurt, because of, putting it lightly, circumstances beyond his control. So if he bet on himself again and rejected this offer, that goes from bold to just stupid. Because, I don't know.
Tommy John recovery isn't perfect. Like,
yeah. Who knows where he ends up next, like, if he's a second-round pick or a third-round pick next year or first-round pick, who knows? It's impossible to tell. But right now he's getting the money that he turned down, so it's not like he's getting shortchanged either.
Take the money and run.
Yep.
He was working out with Mangum on Instagram Live, so I hope that's a good sign.
Yeah, for his teammates.
Yeah. Future sign. Jake Mangum.
I heard Mango. I'm like,
yeah, no. Yeah.
The Mango Man.
The Mango Man, yeah. They were working out together on Instagram. Like, they were live together.
Who was teaching who how to hit? anyway. So
hopefully that's a good sign for his future signing, if he's working out with Mets people, even though they were teammates, like, still.
It's a good point. But we're all going to assume that Ginn signs because he would be crazy not to. So basically that means all six guys that the Mets drafted, they are all part of the system now. So if there's anything we all love, it's ordinal lists. So, in a way, coronavirus has kind of made it a little easier to re-rank the system with these newly drafted guys because there hasn't been a system. So nobody's improved and nobody's gotten worse. There weren't any stories when spring training was actually happening about, like, Ronnie Mauricio suddenly putting on 30 pounds of muscle and turning to the Rock. So it's safe to say that everything is the same pretty much for everybody. So, I mean, that makes things easier. But on the other hand, coronavirus definitely does complicate things when it comes to ranking players. A guy like Brett Beatty, he doesn't have a season, and now he's going into 2021 as a 21-year-old with no experience above rookie ball. A guy like Deadniel Nunez, who's, you know, kind of fringy to begin with. He had, like, one season where his fastball and curveball were flashing above average in A ball. Now he's going to be a 25-year-old reliever with not much of a track record. Yeah. You know? So you think on the surface.
How about Sapucki?
I was just about to say Sapucki, too.
Thomas Sapucki. Like, you think on the surface, okay, players aren't changing, so that makes things easier. But, yeah, the players aren't changing, but the context surrounding everything else is changing. So you know, is not easier.
No.
So we are all going to re-rank the system and insert the players and explain where we think they all belong. Just as a quick refresher, this is the 2020 official Mason Avenue Top 25 list. Number one, Ronnie Mauricio. Number two, Andrés Giménez. Number three, Matthew Allen. Number four, Brett Beatty. Number five, Mark Vientos. Number six, Francisco Alvarez. Number seven, David Peterson. Number eight, Thomas Sapucki. Number nine, Franklin Quilome. 10, Shervian Newton. Number 11, Joshua Wolf. Number 12, Kevin Smith. Number 13, Harold Gonzalez. Number 14, Junior Santos. Number 15, Freddy Valdez. Number 16, Jalen Palmer. Number 17, Tony DeBrell. Number 18, Dyson Acosta. Number 19, Riley Gilliam. Number 20, Adrian Hernandez. Number 21, Daniel Nunez. Number 22, Stanley Consuegra. Number 23, Ali Sanchez. Number 24, Jake Mangum. And number 25, Alexander Ramirez.
I actually forgot that Mangum was in the top 25. Holy fuck.
Yeah.
Yeah. The system has seen better days. So we all had individual lists. So we'll use our own individual lists since everything makes sense in the context of our own explanations or whatever. So where are you guys going to slot in all these new players? Does anyone would like to volunteer?
Should we start with Green? Because he's probably the easiest one to place here. Like, to me, you just kind of lump him in with the DSL high school outfielders too. And just say, Toolsy, young, outfield type, could do things.
Agreed. In my own list, I didn't rank any of those guys. So as a result, I did not rank Green either. Because the profile for him basically is Jake Mangum with less experience.
There's more power there.
I think he's more athletic too.
No.
I guess I would put him around where I put Freddie Valdez, around 12.
Yeah, I think I'd put him.
Yeah,
probably after the upside pitchers, Wolf and Santos, I had at 10 and 11, but before Valdez at 12. So, yeah, 12.
You'd put him above Valdez. I was actually going to say below because, like, Valdez at least has professional experience. Like,
yeah, he's got 2 games stateside or something like that.
That's a fair point, of course.
I don't think that's particularly significant. It's probably more experience than Green.
Well, I'm saying that even the DSL games are probably more useful than high school games, yeah? Or
I don't put much stock in the DSL.
Yeah, I don't.
Especially it might be statistics. Even. They play pretty much all year round.
Oh, no, I'm not saying statistics.
You mean level of competition?
Level of competition and also how much you're putting into baseball, right? Like,
we talked
about how it's problematic that they only do baseball, but Valdez is basically only doing baseball. Green's doing other stuff.
And it's professional coaching, whereas high schools,
that's the biggest thing, I think, outside of the competition or anything.
Yeah.
Is like, Green's high school coach is probably worse than than the professional coach on the Mets.
I'd also give Green a broader base of skills than Valdez.
I agree with that too.
Yeah, that's fair.
I think he's got potential to stay up the middle. Valdez never did.
No.
they're lottery tickets in different ways.
I mean, this is in our joke about ordinal rankings really applies perfectly here because you flip a coin.
We know nothing about either of these guys, really.
Right.
Yeah, it's too early to tell.
All right.
But I think that's a fair place for Green as well, in that chunk. Mm. I think he might have a little more upside, but in that chunk is a good spot for him.
Yeah.
Definitely is a lot of guys in that chunk.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
There's him, Alexander Ramirez, Freddy Valdez, Consuegra, Adrian Hernandez,
yeah.
Robert Dominguez, the pitcher,
I don't mind having that many of those types of guys, like those lottery ticket types of guys, but it would be nice to have more surefire talent at the top balance it out.
Yeah, that is the problem with the system, is that every system should have a boatload of lottery ticket guys like this that maybe one or two you hit on. But when guys like that are
pushing some of our top 10 lists.
When that's the situation, then it starts to become a little hairy.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, I guess I'll just get this out of the way here. Did anybody rank Anthony Walters, Matthew Dyer, or Eric Ors?
No.
Okay.
I'd rank Ors near the top of the system in terms of guys I want to see succeed, but realistically...
I think Ors also has the biggest chance of actually being like a reliever in the majors than any of the other guys being like a utility player. I think Ors has the best chance of if we get a surprise out of this draft, because I don't think it would be a surprise if one of Green, Ginn, or PCA make it, even if Green is on the lower end there. I don't think we'd be shocked But I think Orz is the biggest surprise candidate out of any of them because of, like, he could excel in a bullpen role because it's just sometimes that happens.
He also might, yep. you know, get better when he, you know, doesn't yep. have cancer.
Yeah, literally, like.
like most people usually do.
Yeah. Yeah.
So he's a dude that I'm keeping an eye on both for the off the field. I'm rooting for him and the on the field. Like, I think he has an actual outside chance to be a reliever.
Yeah.
But I'm not putting him on my top 25. And if I do, it's like 25.
Right.
All right. So, we'll look at Ginn then. Where did you put Ginn?
Oh, Ginn is so hard. I don't know what to do with him.
I think he's, for my money, the second best pitching prospect behind Allen right now.
But yeah, I'd agree with that.
I think what's more interesting
is where he would be if not for Tommy John.
If not for Tommy John, he would probably
he might be second or third. he might be higher than Allen. Because
yeah. I would put him.
I'd just put them like definitely older. Close, but, yeah. you know, he's older. He has, you know, the SEC's probably closer to, like, A-ball or Advanced A.
Yeah, then
he has one very good season at that level. Yeah, but we live in a world in which he blew out his elbow, so.
I've really gone back and forth between putting him right above Peterson and right below Peterson. Just based on how much you value that health. I think I agree with you guys that he should be above Peterson. But then the Mets have just had so many bad Tommy John recoveries the last decade or so. Like, I don't know. It's scary.
It's scary, but also I don't think we have this conversation about Ginn if he doesn't have Tommy John.
No.
You're totally right.
He would have been drafted at, like, 6 or 7 or something.
The only reason why we're able to rank him behind Matthew Allen is because he got hurt. Like,
yep.
So it's one of those things where it sucks that, like, it sucks for him. I'm not happy he got hurt, obviously, but he wouldn't be a Met otherwise, like, straight up.
No, you're mm-hmm. right.
He wouldn't have even lasted to PCA's pick, I think.
Oh, no. He would, he would have been, like, around 10-ish.
Yeah, let alone the second round.
I mean, the only three guys I think I'd definitely take over him right now, four guys, excuse me, would be Allen, Jimenez, Mauricio, and Alvarez. And then I think, I know I'm deviating from my original top 25. I don't even remember what I put at this point. But, like, after that, I think he's got an easy argument for him at fifth, I think, over
Vandy. Yeah, I think you can make that case as well.
And now the last, but certainly not least, is P. Carl Armstrong.
Yeah, this is going to be interesting.
Yeah.
So I think I know where I'd put him. I'd probably put him – I had Mauricio, Jimenez, Allen, Alvarez as my top four. Between you, me, and the wall, I'd probably move Alvarez into the three spot and Allen back, but whatever, that's neither here nor there. I'd probably put PCA and Ginn right after Alvarez before Batty and Vientos.
I would do that too. I would put PCA above Batty.
I think
he has a safer chance of being a major league player because if the bat doesn't work for Batty, then he's not going to – like, he just doesn't have a place to play defense.
Like, I think I'm probably not as low on Batty as a lot of people, but we still don't know if he could hit at all. Like,
yeah, yeah.
The power is pretty clearly there. I'm intrigued by the on-base ability so far, but he's going to have to hit a lot, and he hasn't yet, so... Neither has PCA, but PCA is also significantly younger.
Yeah, and not really. He's losing a year, but I don't know if it's as important as a year that he's losing.
Definitely not.
Like if he's not going to play at all this year because of the minors, but if there is minor league baseball next year, it's not really the worst thing. But man, it's a big year for Batty to lose.
Exactly. It could look dumb in a year, you know?
Oh, I mean, this is all, like, Who knows?
I've been thinking about this. It's like, we don't know what, you know, you could say all you want that, you know, certain players are going to be hurt by this more than others. This is a crapshoot for everyone.
This is like taking
an entire year of baseball. Like,
this is taking the crapshoot of scouting minor league players and then adding a pandemic that of the likes of which we've never seen before. So it's like, well, I don't really know how to judge it. It sounds like a cop out, but truly don't really know how to mm-hmm. how I'm supposed to like figure out where to put these guys losing a year and taking that into consideration and all that stuff. So yeah. I don't know. I think you could put him right behind Allen and Ginn and call it a day, or ahead of Ginn. It depends on what you think about Ginn's arm and his health. But
I guess I really, well, I know I usually go first, Steve. You should go before me here.
Oh, are you sure? Because you're too pessimistic?
Yeah.
I'm pretty pessimistic too. My here's my new list now.
Uh-huh.
One, Marty Marie. I didn't change anything else. I just left it as it was and then added the new guys. But
yeah.
Bronny Mauricio, 1. Francisco Alvarez, 2. Matthew Allen, 3. Andres Jimenez, 4. Mark Vientos, 5. Brett Beatty, 6. Thomas Zupucki, 7. David Peterson, 8. Pete Armstrong, 9.
I'm surprised you're that low on him.
I think that I'm high on him, really, because, like, compared to Isaiah Green, the two of them are very similar in terms of, like, everything. But PCA has the track record of being, you know, attending a much better high school, a much more baseball-oriented high school, being on the national team for so many years. He has a longer track record than other guys in that kind of vein, and that's why he's even in the top 10 for me, because at least he has that track record of everything. Because I don't know, the profile is just kind of all right to me right now, but
I might be even lower than that.
Yeah,
I don't know. The more I look at, and I know I'm at the risk of starting another Twitter beef here, aren't I? Like, I'm gonna get some mentions again.
He's an enlightened being, PCA, so he'll just let it roll off of him.
Ah, there it is. I don't know. It's really not my cup of tea. Like, I don't get the appeal of a what should be an upside play with this skill set. Doesn't really do it for me. And like, I don't want to go so far as to put him down with all the other outfielders that we mentioned when we're talking about Green, because he's clearly better than them. Like, he's got a better chance to make it than them. But like, I mean, look, like the position, being a position player in modern baseball is dominated by your ability to produce offensively. And I have much more confidence in, I mean, there are absolutely questions about Beatty's bat and Vientos' bat, and they obviously don't have the defensive fallback that PCA does, but I just think they have a better chance to hit than he does. And I don't.
Mm-hmm. Vientos is the most advanced just by virtue of age and level and everything like that. Yeah, Beatty absolutely has the most upside in terms of that, although Vientos, I think, has surprising power and might grow into some surprising power. But yeah, I mean, then Peter Armstrong, it's kind of like, it's like passive tools almost. You know, being a good hitter nowadays is great and swell, but it's just not as exciting as the upside guys.
I'm probably too low because I want upside in my guys usually, but I don't know. I have him like back end of the top 10. I really did struggle with this too, because I think Ken and Tom, you both, Thomas, you both raised like really good points about the high school track record, the solid defensive fallback, how old Beatty is, how bad Vientos looked the last season and a half or so, or I guess just last season, really.
Yeah, it was just last year.
Yeah, just last year, right?
Like I said, with Green, the same thing could apply to Pico Armstrong. He could just be Jake Mangum, but a little younger. I don't think that's his ultimate fate, but it could be, and that's...
I think they're both better hitters than that, even.
Yeah, I mean, Mangum is kind of a slash hitter, which is kind of weird, but doesn't have the physique.
Mangum literally has a hitting style straight out of the 1940s, but...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, ultimately, I think the ultimate problem here is that, like, I'm not a professional scout, and I'm not even as good a visual scout as you three are, for sure. Like, that's not my whole shtick. And given that, when I just consider the fact that, okay, we've got two high school outfielders, and one of them is supposedly has more upside, but hasn't really shown that ability to hit so much. So what's the delta between them, really? Like, how big is that split in reality? And there's not a ton of evidence that I am super invested in at this point that really conveys to me that PCA is three tiers above Green, I guess is the way to phrase that. Even though he probably is from an actual, like, scouting perspective. I did have another – so while I was wrestling with this, and I did spend a lot of time staring into a blank void trying to come up with a good answer to this question.
I do that often.
Yeah, I mean, that's the best way to solve life's issues, you know. Don't confront them. Just stare at a wall until you can handle it. So let's say the Mets have done something different and taken, Mitchell with that pick. He rank in the top 10.
I'm shocked that this is being brought up.
I mean, honestly, he might rank one.
I'd put him at one.
I would still put him behind Mauricio.
Fair.
Just, I don't know. Like, it's hard for me to just take the brand new player and be like best prospect in the system, unless it's like Bryce Harper. You know what I mean?
Right,
like,
right.
Like,
I also think a lot of people were split on how good Mitchell was going to be.
Oh, absolutely.
I would probably hedge a little bit there and put him behind Alvarez.
I would too. I think I also might put him in.
I'd put him in more or less the same spot that I had PCA in.
Me too. Yeah. like it feels like a
I think I think they're relatively similar players, just one's a lot farther along.
See, this is the interesting, point. Yeah, this is the interesting point to me, right? Like, if they're both the same caliber of player, it's the same argument I already made. Why the hell are you taking the one that's 4 years further away for their three? Further away, like that's the part that really frustrates me here, because I would so readily agree to say, like, yeah, Mitchell slots right there at the back of that top five, and we could quibble about whether he's higher. And I just don't get that with PCA.
You know, it's funny. You could easily make. Go ahead.
I guess the thought process is that he already has the premium center field defense, and they could just build a better hitter.
That's what I was gonna say. Like, you could very easily make the argument the other way. Like, why the hell would you take the older player when you could get the younger player and kind of mold him along in a different way? And
because
you already have
already...
Like, I know. I'm just saying, like, I don't know where I fall on that, like, personally, in my philosophy. Like, I don't – if I had the choice of two, like, identical players and one was 18 and one was 21, I don't know. I think that's too – simplistic. I think there's a lot more that goes into it than
absolutely
just take the older player. So I don't know where I would land on that if I had to make the choice that the Mets made in this draft. Like, I don't know how I would look at it.
I mean, I'm also of the mind that they're not the same player just 3 years apart. I think Mitchell has better skills, but that's a whole different discussion. So, I mean, look, that's not the ultimate point of this. My end goal is to point out that, like, I just have doubts about PCA, and
Has Mitchell signed yet?
Don't know. Let's see.
And that could play into it, too. I'm assuming that they knew that Ginn was not going to be drafted as early as expected. So, and if they already had a slot agreement with PCA and were able to then, you know, finagle everything to also have Ginn, then that would also Impact selecting the two of those guys, PCA and Mitchell.
You're totally right. Let's see. Still unsigned as of 2 days ago.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that is a good point. And of course, Mitchell isn't a CAA client, so.
Just had to mention that shit.
Put the tinfoil hat on for a moment, folks. Yeah.
But yeah, it was definitely not easy. And
no, it's tough.
Who knows what this year is going to be in terms of minor league baseball or in terms of minor league players and how they develop. I mean, if there is an Arizona Fall League, it's like, wow, the Arizona Fall League is going to be really important this year.
Are we going to see like historically low levels of offense in the AFL because the pitchers aren't just totally gassed?
That
they're still hitting on the face of the moon, though.
That's true. That's true.
It will be an interesting season, to say the least. All right. Any last words for the week? Besides, do not catch the fever.
Do not catch the fever, please. Catch the mask fever. Yes, no, that's a terrible slogan. Back to the marketing department with that one.
All right. If anyone has any questions, comments, whatever, you can send us an email at our email address from complexthequeens@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter and shoot us questions there. I'm at Steve Sipa. Lucas is at ElVlahos343. Ken is at KenLevin91. And Thomas is at SadMetSeason, SZN. Subscribe to the podcast, wherever you get your podcast from. Rate and review it. And, of course, thank you for listening. And we will be back next week. And until then, love the Mets. Love the Mets.